insect SCPs. According to science, there are an estimated 10 quintillion insects spread across the planet Earth, with a very small fraction of that number located within a few feet of wherever you are right now. Insects are an inescapable aspect of life on this planet, and while they are very essential to the way that life goes on, for most people they are, at best, a nuisance and, at worst, deadly. From mosquitoes to flies to cockroaches, insects have plagued mankind one way or another forever, and that's certainly not changing anytime soon. It's little surprise, then, that such a class of creatures would have a healthy amount of SCP articles written about them, taking something that's already mildly horrific to most people and upping the ante. We're going to check out just a handful of insect SCPs, although there are a couple hundred of them total. Let's take a look. Let's start with SCP-439, an insect of unknown origin, somewhat resembling a grayish, semi-translucent earwig. It was originally located in mainland China, and no other specimen has been found as of yet. The insect is relatively harmless when encountered on safe terms, aside from the ability to deliver a firm, painful pinch, but the true hazard it poses occurs when it enters the mouth of a sleeping human. Upon entering the mouth of a new host, the insect will travel down the trachea and take up residence in one of the victim's lungs. In approximately 4 to 8 hours, the host will complain of chest pains and shortness of breath, followed shortly by abdominal cramping. The tightness in the chest will increase, as well as a fever, until the host is incapacitated, and it's around this time that the onset of fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva occurs, a disorder that promotes growth of bone into muscle tissue. This causes rapid bone growth, with new bone spurs occasionally protruding through the flesh, and is obviously quite painful. While this is happening, the host will become compelled to seek shelter in a darkened, enclosed space, such as inside household cabinetry, closets, or heating ductwork. Within the first few days without treatment, they will become completely withdrawn and immobile due to the extreme pain, and will begin the final stage of transformation into a bone hive. They will huddle into a fetal position, and entire portions of their skeletal structure will shift alongside something expunged, until their body is roughly spherical in nature and reduced to 3/4 of its original size. New bone protrusions will continue to grow and possibly anchor the body permanently to its new location. The skeletal structure is almost completely unrecognizable at this point, having been converted to a round cage to protect the internal organs and colony. The original queen that entered the host will have produced 20 to 30,000 offspring by now that function as workers, drones, and warriors in a typical insect hive hierarchy. Since only the queen is capable of reproduction, the rest of the hive's inhabitants are harmless, except for the large, strong forceps of the warriors. The interior of the original host is nearly unrecognizable as a human body, as certain organs are removed and used as food, while others are modified to serve as egg incubation chambers. They use the host's own digestive system to process pieces of organic materials collected by the warriors into a nutritive slurry that feeds both the colony and sustains the host hive structure. After 4 to 6 months, a new queen will emerge from within the ranks and choose a drone to mate with. At this point, the colony will destroy itself by rupturing something expunged, upon which the majority of the insects die. Workers and drones are unfit to survive outside the host hive, and warriors will abandon the site, wandering away. No food will be consumed by warriors that isn't slurry produced by the hive of origin. The new queen will venture out, fertilized, to search for her own new hive, and surprisingly, the trauma of evacuation is not what finally causes biological activity to cease in the hive, but starvation. A Foundation researcher performed a range of experiments to determine the extent of damage to the host body after it has finished the transformation. While it had been previously discovered in autopsy that portions of the brain are hollowed out to serve as food, others are left intact, presumably to regulate what bodily functions continue. During the last round of experimentation, the researcher took the opportunity to examine a hive at close range, shortly after transformation. While the eyes are eventually used as a food source, they were still intact here. The researcher opened the eyelids and examined them with a flashlight, discovering that the host's eyes followed the beam. Experimentation was terminated, and no further testing is scheduled. Nature sure is wonderful. Let's move on to SCP-3063, a telepathic, Class 5 reality-bending entity that manifests as an adult male housefly. It's currently believed that only one manifestation exists at any given time, but this is yet to be confirmed. Manifestations are to be considered destroyed when they have sustained damage that would be sufficient to kill a normal housefly, after which it will then manifest elsewhere on Earth. No manifestation event has been observed as of yet, as it would be pretty hard to track a random fly suddenly appearing anywhere in the world, and it's not currently known whether it manifests as an entirely new fly or simply inhabits the body of an existing fly. All of the manifestations operate with a single goal, which is making an agreement with an individual. The terms of such an agreement vary greatly, but almost always involve it promising an individual any single thing they greatly desire in exchange for an unspecified price. Such offers have included large sums of money, the love of other individuals, political power, and reality-bending ability. It's hypothesized that it reads the thoughts of its target to tailor an offer specific to them. It also refuses to discuss anything other than the terms of its agreement. If an individual accepts the terms, the fly will immediately combust and die, at which point the individual will receive what they were promised. If an individual does not accept, it will continue to attempt to tempt them with larger and larger offers until they either accept or the fly is destroyed. If destroyed, successive manifestations will continue to contact the individual until they consent to the agreement. After a period of 2,376 days from the moment an agreement is made, affected individuals will undergo a process, starting with fertilized fly eggs spontaneously appearing within their lungs, throat, stomach, intestines, sinuses, ear canals, rectum, urethra, and muscle tissues. The number of such eggs typically ranges from 5,000 to 20,000. The eggs will hatch naturally, and the resulting maggots will begin consuming tissues of the affected individuals for between 3 and 14 days in order to escape the body. When this period has elapsed, the maggots will pupate and lie dormant before emerging as adult flies 2 to 6 days later. Newly emerged flies will continue consuming their host and breeding with each other until the host has sustained sufficient damage and dies, typically within 1 to 5 weeks. This process has been known to produce upwards of 50 million individual flies. When the affected individual has died, the remaining flies will cease reproducing and enter a stage of dormancy, during which they will eventually starve and die. A new manifestation of 3063 will then appear shortly after the death of the individual. Affected individuals will remain conscious for almost the entirety of this process, resulting in great distress, and roughly 70% of them will attempt to take their own lives. Flies generated during this process are entirely non-anomalous, and if the affected individual dies at any point, the process will stop and the flies will also die. No known method of averting this process other than death has been discovered. To date, 6 Foundation personnel have been contacted by 3063, and attempts have been made to alter the terms of agreement to entrap it into neutralizing itself, though none have met with success. One test involved asking for the death of 3063, which caused the manifestation to combust and fly eggs to appear as normal. It apparently interpreted its death as the death of one manifestation. Another test asked for the permanent containment of 3063, but again, the terms of agreement seemed to extend only to the current manifestation, and a third test, which asked for a permanent cessation of all activities of 3063, resulted in the same. A fourth test asked for knowledge of the true nature of 3063, resulting in a printed copy of the SCP document. Another test asked for clear, understandable knowledge of 3063 other than knowledge currently possessed by the SCP Foundation. This resulted in the results of that test and the following test appearing before the doctor, who proceeds to take his own life with a pen. The following test involved the doctor just asking if there is even a choice before he suffered a severe pulmonary embolism and dying en route to the medical center. SCP-3063 is believed to have been in operation for at least 4,000 years, as the earliest known records of entities and events matching its description have been discovered in early Canaanite settlements. Assuming an approximately constant rate of activity, this means that around 615 agreements have been made. It's entirely possible that it has been in operation for considerably longer, and Foundation archaeological teams are currently searching for earlier recordings of events that would indicate as such. In the event of the death of uncontained individuals due to its effects, MTF Beta 5 is to mobilize and administer said individual with 90 grams of a highly potent insecticide, as well as spraying it within a 10-meter radius of them. After the individual and any generated flies have died, the remains are to be incinerated. I mean, it certainly wouldn't be great to receive a visit from the magic wish fly, but on the other hand, plenty of people die without getting their greatest wish fulfilled first, so it could be worse. Next, we have SCP-1702, a species of bee-like humanoids, consisting of a hive with a single fertile queen and several hundred sterile workers. They have an appearance similar to normal humans, with the notable exception of several prominent bee-like structures, including antennae extending from their heads and chitinous skin along their backs and limbs. They also have similar internal physiology, with the notable addition of a compound stomach, with a chamber capable of processing organic material and raw minerals into a substance resembling human bone that can then be regurgitated and used in hive construction and repairs. 1702-1 is the queen, a large, fertile female, approximately 2.1 meters in length, who typically lays up to 30 eggs per day. She is highly intelligent and is capable of communication in a previously unknown dialect of French. She's proven highly cooperative, as well as being the source of most of the Foundation's knowledge regarding the hive's behavior and mechanics. 1702-2 are male specimens only present during the beginning of a mating cycle, which has only been observed once while in Foundation containment. They appear to be minimally intelligent and did not respond to attempts to communicate. At the end of the mating cycle, all of them were systematically driven away or killed. Lastly, 1702-3 are sterile female workers, currently 340 in number, responsible for construction and cleaning of the hive's physical structure and nurturing young. They also tend to the queen and are responsible for feeding, cleaning, grooming, and inducing egg laying. They appear to be highly intelligent and capable of complex problem solving and logistics, but appear to have vestigial vocal cords and have not responded to attempts to communicate. They only have a lifespan of approximately 5 years. The hive was first discovered in the catacombs under Paris around 1944 by members of the French resistance during World War II. They were able to broker safe passage through the hive in return for living German prisoners of war. It was then rediscovered years later, after which a Foundation containment team was able to convince the Queen to relocate to a biocontainment site, citing the effect of urban expansion on its environment and the possibility of being discovered. It's unknown whether French government officials were aware of the hive's existence in the intervening time period. We're provided a couple of researcher notes related to the project, stating that the Queen has proven a challenge to communicate with. Aside from its unusual dialect, it is also in a constant state of incoherence and delirium, consistent with intoxication, which they suspect to be a side effect of the pheromones that it is constantly exposed to. On its own, it does nothing but wander the hive, and must be guided by workers whenever its eggs are needed. Despite these issues, it has nonetheless been a valuable resource and provided important insight into itself and its hive. The senior researcher, Dr. Colette, believes that it may consider her to be a friend at this stage, and she may be able to leverage that trust. Later, despite extensive experimentation, it was shown that the hive requires a minimum of human biological material to reproduce properly. Their attempts at limiting it to strictly non-human material resulted in the birth of unhealthy workers and caused considerable distress to the hive. At the insistence of the queen, and with oversight approval, the hive is to be provided a new diet, which is to consist of no less than 5% human biological material, processed from a redacted source, and if absolutely necessary, terminated D-class personnel. Sometime later, during contact conducted by 4 personnel including Dr. Colette, the queen reportedly entered a state of lucidity, during which it suddenly pleaded with personnel to be rescued from the hive. The workers tending to the queen then began to enter an aggressive state, resulting in 2 of the personnel being able to escape unharmed, but Dr. Colette and an agent were declared KIA. A camera carried by the agent continued to transmit for another couple of minutes, showing the queen apparently being attacked and torn apart by workers while screaming in pain. For a period of 35 days following the incident, the hive remained highly aggressive and resisted all attempts by personnel to enter. After it calmed down sufficiently for safe passage, 2 armed and armored personnel were dispatched to investigate. They managed to locate the queen, who appeared to be unharmed, and although she has the exact same appearance, behavior, and personality, she no longer has any memory of recollection of events prior to the incident. Another researcher's note states that just as in nature, the queen here appears to be a prisoner of the hive. So long as she is perfect and productive, the workers will pamper and protect her. But the moment she becomes damaged, they will turn on and replace her. To the best of their knowledge, this is not the same queen anymore, just a replacement crafted to the same perfect ideal that the hive expects and requires. That the tissue sample the containment team managed to procure shows a DNA match for Dr. Colette only reinforces this theory. I think we're seeing a similar pattern amongst these articles, of people being trapped in some way by merciless insects. Must be a common fear or something. Next, we have SCP-3035, a strain of American cockroach that mimics the behavior and outward appearance of organisms it observes. This mimicry is superficial, such as being able to reproduce the coloration and behavior patterns of bumblebees without reproducing a bee's complex social network or unique form of communication. They will also mimic each other more rapidly than other organisms, leading to a feedback loop of one instance adopting a new attribute, only for all other instances to immediately mimic the first instance. It should be emphasized that this mimicry is only a shallow approximation, and regardless of the extent of this mimicry, they still retain many of the characteristics associated with cockroaches. We're provided a few package manifests received by the Foundation from Site-173, which is noted as being a decommissioned site. On January 5th, 2012, they received 3 broken keyboards, 6 sealed test tubes, presumed to be filled with either sewage, blood, or both, 3 unsealed test tubes, 0.25 kilograms of assorted cockroach organs, 0.5 kilogram of assorted human organs, and 7 syringes. A week later, they received another similar package, also containing a legal pad with illegible scribbles on it. 10 days later, they received another package with a broken computer mouse, 2 unsealed test tubes, 10 grams of roach eggs, which were destroyed immediately as per procedure, 15.5 kilograms of assorted human organs, and 1 coffee mug with I Hate Mondays on it. We then go back to 2007 to a series of emails from a Dr. Breeman studying the cockroaches. He writes that they noticed something while finishing up with the latest batteries of tests. The cockroaches have adopted a new behavior in which they'll stand along the edge of their enclosure, tapping their forelegs against the glass. This isn't exhibited in any of the insects they're training them to mimic. The next day, they figure out that they're mimicking Breeman, as nearly every day he starts up his computer next to their enclosure and taps away at his keyboard for 20 minutes. Now they've adopted his behavior by sitting up and typing at the glass. They previously presumed these organisms only mimicked other insects, but clearly they were wrong. The next day, Breeman has moved the enclosure to a spot where the cockroaches can watch his work with greater ease. They've proven to be very apt students, and already he has observed them mimicking the motions he makes when he's taking notes or preparing solutions for testing. He's even noticed a few of them flopping around in a rather clumsy attempt to walk. They've also gotten bigger, about 15% bigger, and it occurred so slowly he didn't even think to measure them until he reviewed past footage and noticed the increase. The following day, he exclaims that the cockroaches are walking. He walked into the lab and found them strolling around the enclosure like they own the place, or like a buzzing little classroom of pre-graduate students awaiting their professor. Oh yeah, I like where this is going. Breeman notes that every test he's performed on them still indicates that they have the intelligence of your basic run-of-the-mill cockroach. They can mimic behavior, but can't mimic understanding. The next day, he found some doll-sized tables and chairs and placed them inside the enclosure. They proceeded to sit at the tables and type away at keyboards that aren't there. He even got one of them to drink from a tiny toy coffee mug. A couple of days later, he performed a biopsy on their nervous system, which shows that there's no new growth or structures. They're still just cockroaches. He felt a little bad about killing one of them, as it's hard not to think of them as his little pupils, but none of the others seemed to mind. The following day, however, he returned to the lab to find one of the cockroaches on its back, atop the table, dead. It had been sliced open and gutted, and the other roaches were just strutting around like nothing was wrong. Footage from yesterday shows one of them pinning another to the table and using what looks like sharpened tips on its forelegs to cut it open. Then it started methodically removing the still living bug's fatty tissues, like it was scooping up ice cream. Once it was done, it sat at the table and started tapping away at the invisible keyboard again, like it was taking notes and writing emails based on the results. He thinks that this experiment has gone on far enough. A couple of days later, Breeman writes that they grew 150% larger, and he's going to euthanize the lot of them. A couple of more days later, however, Breeman sends out an email consisting entirely of gibberish letters. We're then given a memo from a few years later, which states that after 3 disastrous attempts at a rescue mission, they're giving up. Every time they send a squad of soldiers down there, these things start adapting their behavior and appearance, becoming more and more aggressive. They also breed like cockroaches. An MTF will be stationed at an entry site to see if anything human comes out, but as of now, they're declaring Site 173 a lost cause. The decision regarding whether or not to deploy nerve toxins to clear it of the roaches is under review, particularly in light of the recent revelation that some of the human organs emerging from the site are fresh. The last thing we're provided is an exploration log of MTF Gamma 3 investigating the initial containment breach at the site. The 4-man team enters the site with respirators on, gagging at the smell. They note that the lighting is low, and the floor is covered with some sort of sludge. There's garbage everywhere and what looks like rotting meat. They soon encounter what appears to be a technician in a lab coat on his knees, and they slowly approach. The technician sounds hurt, speaking in a muffled voice, but when they get closer, the team lead reports that he thinks it's one of the roaches. Its face is just a chitin mask, and it looks like it's begging. Soon after, two large entities roar down a hall and begin charging towards them. The sound of gunfire erupts and continues for some time before ceasing, and the team lead laughs, stating that now he's seen everything. The roaches don't have guns. They just have gun-shaped hands and were waving them around and making gunshot noises. The team continues on, finding a barricade. As they approach, a woman runs away into a bathroom. When the team lead and another agent go to retrieve her, the agent gets stabbed by a roach with a knife hand. The team lead decides to pull the team out, but they soon are surrounded by a number of entities, all chanting, "Goddamn roaches," mimicking a line the team lead had said. The roaches continue chanting as they slam against the barricade, and the team opens fire. Their radios start to cut out, and the agent at the entrance decides to head in to assist them. He remarks that there's gotta be almost 100 of them, but he thinks he spots the team lead. He pursues, as the sound of gunshots ring out across the radio. Control tries to make contact with the team, until eventually the agent responds, saying that he's got the team lead and one other agent with him, and they're on their way out. So, the little cockroaches that could ended up mimicking humans enough to take over the whole site, and it sure seems like they're mimicking the MTF on their way out. Now, one would hope that the Foundation is not that legendarily stupid, but you never know. Let's finish with SCP-726, a species physiologically and genetically identical to the eggs and larvae of a species of blowfly. When these larvae hatch on decomposing animal matter, they begin to consume non-living tissues as normal until nothing remains, at which point they collect at a central point and begin to regurgitate a continuous stream of healthy, living cellular matter, and will multiply in number by unknown means as volume increases. If uninterrupted, they will reconstruct a complete body matching that of the original tissue source. This process occurs at high speed, resembling footage of maggot activity in reverse, and ends with the full restoration of life functions as all larvae abruptly drop off and appear to disintegrate. While otherwise restored to optimum physical health, any organism reconstituted by the blowflies exhibits only the mental processes of a mature blowfly. Instances instinctively follow the wafting odors of decaying organic materials and attempt to consume them via licking and sucking actions. Instances of all species move clumsily and periodically spasm in an apparent attempt to beat non-existent insect wings. Proximity to any source of decaying flesh will excite subjects into mating behavior, coupling without regard to original species. Any mechanically successful copulation will produce a fertile clutch of SCP-726 eggs, which reconstructed females attempt to deposit on any appropriate food sources. 726 has proven capable of replicating a complete body from any volume of flesh, regardless of its condition, including multiple copies of the same body from disconnected fragments. Reconstructed bodies that have subsequently expired can be reconstituted again like any other tissue sample, but are subject to an increasing degradation of accuracy. The blowflies were discovered in West Virginia when a woman was discovered nude in a dumpster behind a local establishment, engaging in a redacted activity with a large male redacted entity. She was subsequently hospitalized for acute dementia, and over the following weeks, locals reported outbreaks of abnormal animal behavior, including large numbers of domestic cattle, swine, and poultry inconsistent with local livestock. Foundation operatives deduced the reproductive habits of the blowflies and discovered animals reconstituting from meat scraps in the dumpster where the woman had been found. During containment sweeps, a number of identical instances of the woman were found wandering the woods near her property. Under interrogation, her husband admitted to the murder and dismemberment of his wife. We're then given a generation log in which a researcher tested the limits of repeated replication. They started with one freshly killed Norwegian rat, which the blowflies reconstituted into two versions of the same rat. The remains of those two rats were then processed into a fine paste and mixed, which the blowflies separated into two portions and reconstructed nearly the same two copies, one with a red right eye. One of those rats was processed into a fine paste and reconstituted with a slight limp and blind in both eyes. The heart from that blind rat was taken and reconstituted into a rat without eyes or pigmentation, which squeaked incessantly. The heart from that rat was taken and cut in half, which was reconstituted into two eyeless rats, one that only walks in tight circles, and the other being completely devoid of hair and unusually aggressive towards the other. A scrap of flesh was taken from the hairless rat and is reconstituted into an eyeless, hairless, and limbless rat, which fails to return fully to life. Its brain case is found to contain a liver, which is taken and reconstituted into an eyeless, hairless, and limbless rat with an elongated, worm-like midsection. Nodules scattered throughout its body appear to be incomplete eyes, and it has a drastic increase in aggression, eventually consuming its own posterior and expiring from blood loss. The fresh, complete remains of that rat are reconstituted into a large, formless mass of tissues and viscera, which trembles until extinguished. And then a portion of that is taken and reconstituted into a large, slug-like, motile mass of undifferentiated cells. It appears to absorb nutrients through its skin. A portion of this creature is taken and reconstituted, but it results in the same creature, and this test is repeated four more times. The researcher decides to keep the final slug creature for long-term observation, calling it Brundle. Next, they moved on to a single scrap of dried flesh from a cadaver, a couple of thousands of years old, resulting in a reconstituted middle-aged male exhibiting expected fly behavior. A fingertip is then taken from a D-class subject, resulting in a copy of that D-class, whose DNA was a precise match, but their teeth and fingerprints were reversed. An eye is then taken from that same D-class and reconstituted, now with normal teeth, but entirely foreign fingerprints. Some of the blowflies are taken and applied to a large infected gash on a D-class's ankle, resulting in them consuming the dead tissues and reconstructing the area until the wound was healed. They appeared healthy until their behavior deteriorated over the course of a few hours, eventually displaying the expected behavior, at which point they were terminated. A porterhouse steak is taken and reconstituted into a mature steer, which was then slaughtered and cut into steaks, served to a group of D-class. The D-class seemed normal afterwards, until something expunged occurred, at which point they were terminated. They tried this test again, subjecting the steaks to a variety of chemical and thermal sterilization methods, including radioactive bombardment, but the results proved the same. Next, a fine paste of assorted insects and arachnids was taken and reconstructed into arthropods behaving as flies, the females of which produced SCP-726 eggs. Then a fine paste of normal adult blowflies was reconstructed into a single abnormally huge fly, which quickly expired. A fillet of salmon was reconstructed into a mature male salmon, which convulsed violently as though drowning when placed in water. It flopped haphazardly when removed from liquid, but did not display stress as it asphyxiated. Similarly, a fried calamari ring was reconstructed into an adult male squid, which was placed in a pool of water. It writhed helplessly until removed from liquid. A fast food cheeseburger was taken and reconstructed into two mature cattle and a number of Norwegian rats. And a can of commercially available potted meat food product was reconstructed into something entirely expunged from the record. A single corpse of the entities from that experiment was ground into a paste and reconstructed into something else redacted, which exhibited extreme hostility to moving objects. All termination attempts failed, so it was frozen. A sample of that creature was thawed and reconstructed, but the redacted entity exhibited properties similar to another SCP, so it was incinerated. The researcher decided not to take the tests any further, and says that they might even put Brundle down. So, obviously, unlike articles based around cats, or dogs, or even rodents, insects are generally reviled, and are a frequent source of body horror. This isn't too surprising, as it's a lot easier to make an icky thing ickier than it is to make it wholesome. Thankfully, we live in a world where bugs can only do mundane things, like give you malaria, or plant eggs inside of your ear canal. On that note, I think I've had enough of creepy crawlies for now.